Greetings, listeners. This is Ralph Edwards, a.k.a. Warren, from the Concrete Gang and Creatures of the Industry podcast. I feel privileged to introduce the Concrete Gang 50th Anniversary Archive, because this is the 50th anniversary of the Concrete Gang on Community Radio 3CR, first started by the rank and file of the BLF, and now presented by the rank and file of the CFMEU. We've been presenting a weekly program about our industry and the struggles it's faced over those 50 years. In fact, since 3CR first went to air in February 1976. This archive comes in two parts. First, the good old days, inverted commas, when it was recorded on reel-to-reel and then recorded over. So, special thanks to our loyal listeners who have recorded them on their cassette tape recorders as they listened on a Sunday morning, and saved them for everyone to enjoy again. Second part of the archive is when we entered the 21st century in the early 2000s and the show was digitally recorded and kept as we went. So the material, although patchy in its continuity, shows the transition of the Concrete Gang over 50 years, in those two parts of approximately 25 years each. So enjoy the listen, and thanks to all those who presented the program and all those who helped get it to air. You will find it on www.3cr.org.au/Concrete Gang 50 Years, all one word. Dare to struggle, dare to win.
On the old, we're working in the summer heat and in the winter cold. And the labour power we sell, me boys, for a hard-earned weekly pay, produces mighty profits for the greedy MBA. So keep your powder dry and hold your head up high. It's class to class and face to face, our limit is the sky. We've got a fighting history and we never will be cowed. A builder's labourer is a name to make a man feel proud. And whether we were born here or born in Italy, in Greece or Spain or Ireland, in England or Fiji, we all of us are workers, and united we must stand until the wealthy bludgers have been driven from our land. So keep your powder dry and hold your head up high. It's class to class and face to face, our limit is the sky. We've got a fighting history and we never will be cowed. A builder's labourer is a name to make a man.
Welcome to the Concrete Gang once again, and tonight we're going to concentrate on two issues, the action by Ballarat residents and the Builders Labourers Federation in opposing the so-called development of the Bakery Hill area by the McDonald's American Monopoly Food Group, and also we're going to look at our recent log of claims. And in the studio tonight we have two members of the Bakery Hill Action Group, Jack Harvey and Jeff Hendy. And they're going to answer some questions we've got for them and try and tell us what this sort of business is all about. And so I suppose we'll go straight over to you, Jack, and if you can tell us more or less what this dispute is about.
Well, we're trying to save the or preserve the historic character of a whole area. And there's various aspects to this. In general terms, it's well known that Ballarat's a historic city. Ballarat is famous for its history, and a lot of people go there to look at the historical aspects of Ballarat. The whole area known as Bakery Hill, which is quite a large area, has been associated with a number of specific important historical events. It was here that the first large meetings of the miners took place before the Eureka Stockade. It was also in this general area that the Welcome Nugget was discovered. Now, people have thrown this back at us and said, well, you know, that those things didn't happen right on the site of these shops. We've never suggested that these things did happen right there. However, we think that it's inappropriate that in an area in proximity to these events that we should have a big M sign as the first thing that visitors from Melbourne see. The specific historical value of the shops, the 13 shops involved, is that they represent a streetscape typical of the 1850s to 1900 era, which is a sort of streetscape that's fast disappearing in Ballarat. We've been knocking down our history at a great rate in the past few years, and this is one of the few areas that is still intact in terms of character of that period.
Jeff, what was the strength or the following your the Save Bagley Hill Action Group has?
Well, the following has been remarkable in that the campaign only started approximately 3 weeks ago. We've had organisations such as the Ballarat Fine Arts Council, the Ballarat Branch of the Labour Party, the Ballarat Branch of the National Trust, both senior and junior groups, coming out in support of the activities of the group in trying to prevent the demolition of this area. Also, I think we've been very successfully petitioning throughout Ballarat, and we have upwards of 3,000 signatures of interested people who deplore the proposed demolition of the area. The support is still being sought from trade unions, local members of parliament, from all interested organisations within Ballarat. So it would be very fair to say that the group, the support given to the group has been quite incredible to this day.
Well, we'll take a break in the interview now, and just to get a bit of theme music into the business, we'll play a record by Shirley Jacobs called Cross of the South, which of course refers to the Eureka flag.
Was the month of December, the year 54, when the men of Eureka rebelled. And they swore that the flag that they'd made for themselves ever proudly aloft would be held. Oh, the miners took arms in the stockade that day. The bold word passed from mouth to mouth. We will stand by this flag and the stars that it bears, white stars of the cross of the South. Oh, the hot blood of heroes ran fast in their veins, but there was but one man they obeyed. And the hero of heroes they chose from their ranks, Peter Lawler, their hero they made. Peter Lawler said, now you must stand by your guns, fear not the cannon's fierce mouth, for I see that the soldiers are gathering now to tear down the cross of the South. Captain Thomas, he charged the Eureka stockade with 300 troops by his side. Fire and steel met them then, and they fell back again, but the first of the miners had died. And the smoke of the battle had scarce cleared away when the soldiers came charging once more. And the miners were killed as they stood round the flag, or fell from the wounds that they bore. Bold Peter Lawler lay shot on the ground where the soldiers had left him for dead. And the flag that he loved lay there by his side, the white stars all stained with red. Peter Lawler, he rose on his knees in the dust, these wild words poured from his mouth. You can murder us all in black tyranny's name, but you can't kill the cross of the South.
Jeff, can I ask you this question? What sort of resentment is there, you know, from the people of Ballarat towards the destruction of not only Bakery Hill, but to other parts of Ballarat in regards to the to property developers?
Well, there's great resentment. Obviously, Ballarat, has, in our opinion, has been a gracious city. The developers have moved in over the last 5-6 years in my presence there, quite considerably. You've got Coles, New World Venture, car parks. This type of thing is making way. What we have now is demolishing the once magnificent history of Ballarat. Now, the resentment is quite remarkable as far as we can gather from community reaction. Obviously, car parks have a place in the city, but not to the extent of demolishing buildings, which play a very large part in Ballarat's history, which is quite remarkable. So the resentment, to our point of view, has been quite considerable.
Jack, what sort of development do you visualise for Bakery Hill?
Well, there's a number of possibilities. at one extreme, we could say no McDonald's at all. Let's just develop the shops that we have there. To the other extreme, where we could fit McDonald's into some scheme in a sympathetic way. A problem is, of course, that a lot of people lack imagination when they look at old buildings. They see a row of grotty old shops. Nobody's denying that's what they look like at the moment. We believe they can be economical once again. In the past, since the war, I suppose, since the Second World War, it's been a pretty rundown area of Ballarat. But the commercial area adjacent to this is about to be developed into a pedestrian mall, and we believe, and the consultants who looked at the feasibility of the mall in the first place believed, that one of the benefits of this is that it would revitalise the area that we're talking about as an area of small shops. But instead people say, no, they look a bit scungy, we'd better knock them over and have a nice car park with a McDonald's in the middle of it instead. We don't see that at all. We think they can be economical as a group of small shops, possibly with associated McDonald's and Pizza Hut buildings, in a character quite different to what they've ever been prepared to build anywhere in the world before. They've said they're prepared to have a go at this. We're keen to see whether they really mean it.
Jeff, how does the reconstruction of Baker Hill fit in with the tourist aspects of such as Sovereign Hill and
Well, the reconstruction, the renovation, the rejuvenation of the Bakery Hill would fit in magnificently with Ballarat's history. Obviously, Sovereign Hill is history recreated, but Bakery Hill is history already there. Now, there's little point in recreating history at one point and demolishing at the other. So, obviously, the retention of that area, it would be of enormous value to Ballarat's history and to the tourist trade.
Jack, do you think the action group from the Bakery Hill will win through?
Well, I've been involved in a few preservation battles as a loser in my time, but I reckon we're on a winner here. A month ago, I guess, we didn't particularly think so, but the community support has really rallied because it's just such an extreme thing, a McDonald's versus what we've got there. And now with the support of the unions and the builders' labourers coming out and giving their support, this has given us the bargaining point that we really need to drive our ideas home. And it's given us time to convince the community, who, in general, as usual, are fairly apathetic, I guess. It's given us time to put our point of view and really fire them with enthusiasm.
You're listening to the 50-year anniversary archive of the Concrete Gang. Unbelievable that we're still going. So listen on.
Sarah?
I've up me bluey through all the day, with my old black filly the best of May. For years I've camped and toiled and tramped over roads that are rough and hilly. I've carried me sensible, indispensable old black filly. My old black filly. My whether the wind be warm or chilly, I always find Let me old Black Billy the bears may do hold. When me trap and day this last are o'er, and I drop my swag at that golden door, Saint Peter will say, come in with your sensible, indispensable old Black Billy. My old Black Billy. My old Black Billy. Whether the wind be
to 3CR Community Radio and the Concrete Gang, the show of the Builders' Labourers. We'd just like to thank the boys from the Bakery Hill, Save the Bakery Hill Action Group, and we hope that the union in alliance with the people of Ballarat can win, and we're quite sure that they will win after the, you know, what we've heard tonight.
Thanks, Keith.
And now we're going on to an interview with Norm Gallagher over the current log of claims by the Builders Labourers Federation. Norm, why has there been such a gap between the actual start of the log and the beginning of the campaign itself?
The unions that intervene, and there's no doubt in my mind that the employers have put some unions up to intervening in our application so as to prolong it. We've now settled our differences with the unions, and we've now decided now to start the campaign.
And what sort of actions is the union now taking in support of the log?
Well, we're decided to have a campaign of hit and run, of guerrilla type tactics that we've used against the employers over the years. That type of tactic that allows our blokes to at least take some money home each week and yet still continue to fight.
And is this campaign taking place on a national level in other states as well as in Victoria?
Yes, it's a national campaign, and every branch of the Federation is involving itself in the campaign.
The log seems to completely break through calls for restraint and indexation and the policy of wage cuts that are being pursued by the big capitalists. Why is the union doing this, and why is it so important for all Australian workers that the campaign be successful?
Well, first of all, you know, it's just ridiculous to call on the unions to have wage restraint when the employers are still continuing to make enormous profits. For instance, the builders in this industry are still going up to the Gold Coast for their half-year holiday and still buying their Rolls Royces and their new cars. It seems to me it's a very one-sided proposition that when, on the one hand, they call for the workers to have wage restraint, and then on the other hand, they say nothing about the enormous profits that the employers, especially the multinationals of this country, are making today.
And when the campaign is successful, on the assumption that it will be successful, what benefits do you think this will have, not only for builders' labourers, but for all Australian workers?
Well, first of all, you see, it's 3 years since we've had a new award. And there's no doubt in my mind that because the court has not granted full indexation, that the workers have lost their real purchasing power. And it's hoped by this campaign to get back that real purchasing power that the workers need to at least stay a bit in front.
How long have claims Concrete Gang has gone in throughout the city of Melbourne? We've had complete militant support for it. Costains, State Bank, The Hole have all had lightning 24-hour strikes in support of our claims. The Austin Hospital have had a 24-hour strike and also have endorsed to take an afternoon smoko break because we're after an afternoon smoko break in our lower claims. We feel that things are coming to a head and we feel that we're winning at the moment.
Well, it will be a hard struggle, but following from our past history, I reckon we'll definitely win it. It's as Normie was saying at the last general meeting, it's a different kind of battle. We've got to fight it on the jobs and not just walk off the jobs, which is often an easier thing to do. But we're really firing now, and I reckon when we're firing, we're all unstoppable. I just was wondering, Mario, how the scaffolders feel after fighting a long battle themselves. How they feel fighting again.
Well, the scaffolders were the storm troops in this campaign, I suppose, and they got tremendous assistance from all the jobs. They got tremendous backing from the union, and they were finally successful in their log of claims. They actually got a $30 rise out of it, and now on the different jobs that the scaffolders are working on, if that job goes out on a 24-hour stoppage, well, of course, the scaffolders are backing it all the way.
Well, that sounds pretty good, and we sort of hope other workers feel inspired to struggle really hard to break through indexation themselves. And next week, we are going to have for you some interviews from jobs where action has been taken or is being taken.
Recently, we've been witnessing a good example of both the effects of imperialism and the irrationality of capitalism in Australia. A couple of weeks ago, the US-owned General Motors Holden Company announced that because of a problem of overproduction, they were going to stand down 20,000 production workers in four states for 1 week later this month. And they proposed that the workers take this week as 1 week of their 4 weeks annual holidays. If they wouldn't agree to this, they said, then up to 1,000 people would be sacked instead. Now, we'll be talking about some of the issues involved in the whole question of transport and the production of motor cars in future weeks. But for this week, let's have a quick look at the operation of General Motors in Australia. Last year, their profit here was $16.1 million, slightly less than that for the previous year, but still part of an enormous worldwide profit for 1976 of $2,400 million. The managing director of General Motors Holdens in Australia, Mr. Chapman, claims that $16.1 million represents only a small return on General Motors' total investment in Australia of $364 million. But in fact, when you realise that of that $364 million total invested capital, exactly $1.9 million actually came from the US, then it seems that such a return might not be so bad after all. In 1931, the US portion of the original Holden Company was just $1.9 million, less than $2 million. Since then, all further development has been financed exclusively and independently from the operations of the Australian section of the industry. and that includes direct capital investment and repayment of Australian government loans. So the balance of the $364 million, which General Motors Holdings has invested in Australia, that is all but $1.9 million of it, has been produced directly by the workers in Australia. Now, that's pretty good going, but it's not all that the workers in Australia have produced for General Motors in America. In that same period, General Motors Holden has sent back substantial dividends to its shareholders in America. Now, the direct dividends amount to a little over $370 million, but as the Labor Senator Gietzelt recently pointed out in Parliament, to this has to be added such things as fees paid to the parent company, concessions paid for goods traded, and various other devices that they use to avoid tax payments. When these are taken into account, Senator Gietzelt calculated, the total dividends paid from the Australian operation to the US over the last 50 years must exceed $1,000 million. So, just to summarise, the situation is this. For their initial investment in Australia of under $2 million, GMH now has investments of $364 million, in addition to the dividends paid back to America of more than $1,000 million. The late President Allende of Chile used to say that there were two Chiles, the existing one and a Chile of equal value that had been exported to the United States. If the same logic were to be applied here, we could say that there are three Australias, the one here and two more, each of equal value, which have been expropriated for the benefit of capitalists in America. It's popularly put about that foreign investment helps create jobs in a country. But this example alone shows that in the case of General Motors in Australia, for every job created here, we have foregone the possibility of creating two more jobs just because of the imperialist domination of the industry. And finally, for this week, this example also shows how little regard such companies, and indeed capitalist enterprises in general, have for the welfare of their workers. In spite of the fantastic wealth produced by Australian workers for the absentee capitalists in America, at the first suggestion of any difficulties, the same capitalists are prepared to stand down or sack literally thousands of workers. In short, the companies are holding us quite literally to ransom, and on the basis of the very wealth which we ourselves have produced.
Well, Bruce, if that was just a little bit of a summary about what's going to happen next week, about or in the following weeks, about how the Yanks are fleecing us, for God's sake, hey, it shows you what they're taking out of this country, and it's just unreal.
Yeah, the thing that gripes us is that we're making it. Well, that's it, folks, for another week, and we're going out with a song that appears on an album called Men at Work, and the song is by Tommy Armstrong, and it tells of the South Medamsley strike of 1885, a strike which was unfortunately broken by blacklegs. And no doubt, even though that strike was broken, those blokes continued to fight for their rights. So, goodbye for another week.
If you're inclined to hear a song, I'll sing a verse or two. And when I've done, you're gonna see that every word is true. The miners of Truth Madam's Lee, they never will forget. By the Kindy's tyranny and how they have been set. For in the midst of danger, these hardy sons of toil fought to own their daily bread so far beneath the soil. To make an honest living, each miner did contrive. But ye shall hear how they were solved in 1985. Oh, the miners of the peasants leave, they're gone to make some stew. They're gone to boil for plastic and these naughty candy crew. The maker should have an output soup as long as they're alive. In memory of the dirty six in 1985. Below the county average then the men was 10%. Yet physically unfeeling Corey couldn't arrest content. A 10% reduction from the men he did demand was such a strong request as this the miners couldn't stand. The notices was all sawed out and when they had expired, all the gear was brought to bank and the final shot was fired.
So hot his underswoke and men that slew left hand to strive. He lost and rode for what he did in 1885. For the miners of Superbly, the gunners to make some stew. The guns are boiled but for sick and his dirty candy crew. The mater should have no good soup as long as they're alive. In memory of the dirty tricks in 1885. Isaac was determined still more to need to sue. For to get some candy men he wandered to and fro. He made his way to concert and he saw for six the boom. He knew he liked such dirty jobs and he was sure to come. Isaac told them what to do and where to go and when. So at the time appointed for to landed with his men. Were politicians and were candy men, the place was all alive. All through the strike that Isaac caused in 1880. Oh, the miners of Sioux Falls believe the guns to make some stew. The guns to boil pot for stick and his dirty candy crew. The maester should have an output soup as long as they're alive. In memory of the dirty tricks in 1885. Commander Potter gave the word and started with the walk. But they were done at 5 o'clock, the doors and stopped till dark. And when they'd done all they could and finished for the day, the bobbies got his postick and his dirty dogs away. For Isaac was a tyrant, the owners was the same. For the turnout of the strike, they wore the men to blame. Neither them nor postick need expect they'll ever thrive. For what they did to Dipton men in 1885. For the miners of Sioux Melody, the guns to make some stew. The guns to boil for postick and his dirty candy crew. The maester should have no good soup as long as they're alive. In memory of the dirty tricks in 1885.
Thank you for listening to the Concrete Gang 50-Year Anniversary Archive. All those episodes where we dared to struggle and we dared to win. And hopefully you've enjoyed it and come back and listen to some more. You will find it on www.3cr.org.au/Concrete Gang 50 Years. Thank you very much.